Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Skip Button, a podcast all about the music you love to hate. I'm your host, Ben Barzilai. So there's a lot of great content out there about the music that we all love, but I have always been interested in the other end of the spectrum, the songs and artists that, for whatever reason, we as a community have all agreed are trash. And that's what I want to talk about on The Skip Button. This is going to be a show where I and some of my closest friends talk about the most hated on artists and moments in the history of popular music. Together, we're going to take a second look at the music and ask, why is this so hated on, and is the hate really all that merited? For the inaugural episode, I asked my friends to sit down with me and share their thoughts on one of the most successful slash hated on bands of all time, Nickelback. Jake, Matt, AJ, and Anik, who I've been friends with for about as long as I've known Nickelback, revisited some of their greatest hits with me and shared their thoughts on the music and where they think it all went wrong for the band. Along the way, we talked over each other, got easily distracted, and definitely said a thing or two that was objectively incorrect, but I hope you guys enjoy, and if so, keep your eyes peeled for new episodes because Lord knows there's no shortage of music we love to hate. Thanks, guys.
What, do you guys remember the first Nickelback song you heard?
I feel like it would have to be...
It had to have been Photograph.
No.
Oh, for me, it was definitely Photograph.
No.
How you remember? Wait.
Guys, turns out I was wrong. It wasn't, so I guess it was.
No, How You Remind Me came out, like, it had to be, like, 3 or 4 years before.
No, it definitely, How You Remind Me came out first, but it was definitely Photograph that was the first. You know how I remember is because, do you remember Hit Clips?
Those, like, really mini,
that only played, like, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
I had one, and one of them was Photograph, and I was like, what is this?
Dude, people had, like, iPods at that point, real iPods.
I wasn't listening to this kind of music. Like, I was into, like, hair metal and stuff when Nickelback was big.
So, favorite band was Kiss when we were kids.
Kiss, Guns N' Roses. Yeah. I went through a Kid Rock phase.
Dude, I actually still remember the Kid Rock song that you kept rapping.
I know you do, yeah, Cocky.
The one where he said, I used to be broke, confused, no joke, got used, smoked dope. Paid dues, refused to give up quick. Now I got motherfuckers on my dick.
10 million motherfuckers on my dick.
You know, I've never.
This is a Kid Rock song.
I've never actually heard that song.
You just know it from Jake. Right?
We should make an episode about Kid Rock and table this conversation.
Transition.
Also, I'd just like to say, it might not be a bad idea just to have everyone sort of introduce themselves so that people can attach names to voices.
Oh, that's
you
fair.
You were like, oh, haha. AJ says no, and like people don't know who that is.
Okay, so this is AJ.
No, this is Ben.
That was AJ.
So my name is Ben, and I'm here with very longtime friends that I've known a Nick. This is a Nick.
So you're right. It's
a Nick, you haven't spoken yet. Say something.
I'm a Nick. I'm the former lead singer of a Nick Boy and Crew.
That's true.
That is just true, yeah.
I've known Ben since kindergarten, and yeah. He sang to my left.
And you
are the picture.
I'm AJ.
You're already so upset about it.
I'm Matt, and I want to talk about Nickelback.
I'm Jake. I was recruited last minute to give a, quote, rock star perspective.
You were also a former member of Nick Boy and Crew.
No, I wasn't.
No, he wasn't.
You were in Nick
Boy. I was a former member of Volume by Slices.
Volume by Slices, Zigzags,
Emergency Drench
Tuna and the Wongs, Emergency Drench Hoes, Shoe Souls. Now I'm in Cloud District.
Cloud
District.
Yeah, everyone go check out Cloud District. Yeah.
Go ahead.
catch us on tour in February.
What is the band? Give the band camp.
What's your handle?
Name.
Just like Google Cloud District Band and it's the band camp page. Cop, there's don't give up skeleton for free on Bandcamp.
Nice.
Okay, great. Now you want to talk about Nickelback?
All right. So, the funny thing about... So, I was looking up Nickelback because I have nothing better to do in my spare time. And so, first of all, they are like one of the... I read that they are the second most successful non-US band in the US next to the Beatles.
So wait, they're not from the...
What?
They're Canadian, dude.
Yeah. Whoa!
Hey.
That's already kind of bomb.
So I was going to bring that point up, because I just know how successful they are, like, without looking it up. And, how much can you really hate?
That's what I want to talk about.
You mean, like, you have to, on some level, respect?
Like, you got to give some props for that.
Right.
Sure.
But that's the thing, is that, like, they're just objectively so successful. Apparently, How You Remind Me was the number one rock song of the 2000s.
Like, what?
of that decade.
You mean, like, just, like, the best selling?
Like, it was the Imagine Dragons of the 2000s?
Sure. I don't know.
Imagine Dragons had the number one rock song.
It had numbers 1 through 3, I think.
And Panic at the Disco, High Hopes, hashtag Mayor Pete was number 4.
I hate that song.
Everything about that whole thing just sucks, but go on.
Anyway, so I guess what I really wanted to talk about is like the paradox of them being like the biggest band of all time and the most hated band of all time. So I was doing research on them. I wanted to find out how they got started. They started off as a Led Zeppelin cover band.
That kind of makes sense to me.
Here's the crazy part.
That's like Greta Van Fleet. Greta
Van Fleet actually stole that name back when Nickelback was a Led. No, it was called Village Idiot.
But the appropriation doesn't stop with Greta Van Fleet, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We're going to have an episode about that.
I don't know if Village Idiot is a Led Zeppelin reference, but if it is, I don't get it.
The village is in the Shire, so... That's why it's Led Zeppelin, like
they reference Tolkien a few times.
Okay.
They do. Like, it's in the songs.
No, you were agreeing with me, I guess.
Yeah.
They started off as a Led Zeppelin cover band called Village Idiot. And then, this is what I read. This is what I read about them. By the way, it's Chad Kroeger, we found out recently.
Like, that's going to be a real problem for me to remember that.
Yeah, I thought it was Kroger this entire time.
Dude, it explains why I see him in my dreams, dude.
So Chad Kroeger's stepfather gave him $4,000 so that the band could record their first demo, and the band spent half of the money to record the EP and spent the other half on magic mushrooms.
They spent like $2,000.
Jesus Christ.
I just think that makes you wonder, was magic mushrooms super expensive in like the 90s, or was it just like they bought that many?
I think they just bought that many. But also, it's just blowing my mind now that that's the music that they made when they like transcended and like became legends. Like, that's what was the most inspiring thing to them in their eagle estate was photographs.
That was when they like achieved their like broadest horizon.
Yeah, like they saw like the most like deep, like pure truth, and it was.
Could you imagine like taking mushrooms and then just like looking at really old photos of you in like elementary school? Like, look at this photograph.
Like, yes, I can. But I wouldn't express that feeling through the song.
I
think you can argue that song is kind of a description of looking at a photo on
magic mushrooms.
Just like, look at this photograph. Every time I do it, makes me laugh. I'm like,
everything makes me laugh.
But that's just fucking diseased, man. You should laugh every time you look at a photograph.
Well, also just,
every single fucking time.
Can we also just point out how fucking reprehensible that is, that your fucking father...
Your stepfather.
Gave you all this money to, like, help you achieve your dreams, and you just, like, fucking got high.
50% of it on drugs.
Well, that's like a real dirtbag.
I mean, the mushrooms were crucial to the success.
Yeah.
We can't argue that they weren't.
Yeah.
I would argue that they were. Like,
it's part of the formula.
And I know nothing about
it. But you didn't say that they took the mushrooms and then wrote the music. I was under the impression that it was, like, their reward. They were, like, sick.
Yeah, I don't know that they were related.
Well,
let's go get
it's crucial to their mind shaping.
Yeah.
Right.
Like regardless...
Not, sure.
They definitely took them at some point, and then that would have impacted their future music.
They made that pasta from fans.
Maybe they dealt them. That's how they find
they were flipping.
Yeah.
Flipping and pushing the shrooms.
Yeah.
Okay, so this was in... Does anyone want to guess when their first EP came out?
I'm going to guess
1997.
Okay, you guys did a lot better on that. It was 1996.
Oh, I got the closest.
I was so close. What'd you say?
97.
I said 5.
I'm closer.
Which no, but if you overshoot it, it's wrong. So
yeah.
He overshot it because he went too far back.
Okay, but so
yeah, okay. Yeah, you have to go below it. And if you go over, then
So the first point I wanted to make about this is that I had never done a deep dive on their like deep cuts before, and I didn't realize that like outside of their hit singles, they were kind of like a pretty heavy rock band. If you do a deep dive on their music. Like, you know all the pop songs, but all the songs that you don't know are kind of like that. Like, they're all, like, pretty, like, heavy. So what I found out... So I was, like, trying to figure out, like, when the hatred of them started. And what... I found an article that said that the first, like, sin was that they got signed to Roadrunner, which at the time had, like, Slipknot and Machine Head and all these, like... metal and, like, heavy, heavy rock bands.
Oh, so the people were mad that they weren't hard enough.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so people who were, like, in, like, the heavy rock and metal scene were, like... Because back then, I was, like, at a time where, like, people were fans of labels. Where, like, people were, like, fighting.
Which is
like,
so irrelevant now.
Yeah, which is...
I was going to say, that's still a thing. Like...
It's not a thing the way it used to be, though.
In like indie and like more that's like fair. DIY scenes, like 100%.
That's fair.
Like if you're signed to like Run for Cover Records, like that's, you like made it in a certain sense.
Do people still agree. Like,
yeah. Okay.
I'm a real fan of Young Money, Cash Money.
That's okay. I stand corrected.
But like if you signed to like Warner, Cap, like it doesn't matter.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah, exactly.
So it maybe makes sense, like even back then, it being like more like a niche metal type label, it makes sense that people would be mad about it.
Right.
Dude, their most recent album in 2017 debuted at number 5 in the US.
You're talking about Nickelback?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Damn. That's wild.
Dude, yeah, I mean, legacy acts are big, you know?
Right. Feed the Machine sold number 5, 47,000 album equivalent units.
Have you listened to that album?
No.
I listened to a couple of songs, and that's like a heavy rock album.
This is the recent one?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, okay, so they released an album in 2000... Leader of Men was the single, which is like a perfectly fine song. But I think that the other thing that people hated is Nickelback lyrics have always been trash. That's what everyone always says about Nickelback. And okay. Kind of the one insult that holds water is that their lyrics are usually like pretty empty. And they also are like always like 3 years behind rock trends. Like they released like a Pearl Jam album like 4 years after Pearl Jam released that album. And so I think everyone was just like, why would we listen to this when they're... Jake is side-eyeing me.
When you say Pearl Jam released that album, what album are you referring to?
It just sounds like an attempt to create a Pearl Jam album that's already been created, like, 5 years ago.
I think Ben actually... Well,
everyone was doing that in the mid-90s. Though.
That's true. But I think that people just, like... I think Nickelback didn't offer anything to rock fans that wasn't already being offered, and yet they were getting... really big.
But when did they get really big?
So,
because Photograph does not sound like a Pearl Jam song.
No, that's true. But the Photograph came out in like 2005.
That's what I'm saying. Like, right. I don't know much, but right. I don't know if they were big before like 2003 or 4.
Get the note up.
Okay, so they released their big like break was when they released Silver Side Up, which is one of their bigger albums, which incidentally was released September 11th, 2001.
So is the Blueprint by Jay-Z.
Yeah, yeah. And I. Yeah.
The Blueprint to what?
just go on.
We're editing that.
Yeah, it's going to take no longer than
right awkward cut. AJ like
just said
seconds.
That while walking out of the bathroom like a goddamn asshole. So that week, Blueprint was number 1 and Silver Side Up was number 2 on the album charts.
And that was their second album.
That was their second major label album.
Huh.
And so Silver Side Up was the one that had How You Remind Me. And I was reading about that album, and Chad Kruger, it's so hard for me to say Kruger.
Would you say Chad?
the Chadster said the album started by him studying every song sonically, lyrically, and musically that was on the radio. I would dissect every single song that I would hear on the radio, or every song that had done well on the charts, and say, how did this do well, and just try to do that on this album. So again, they're just like...
openly admits to being like an uninspired copycat.
Sure, yeah.
I have to be honest. I don't think I think that is shallow artistically, but I guess I also... So, I don't know if respect is the right word, but like I kind of fuck with somebody who's willing to acknowledge
right.
that totally. And just say like, this was my attempt at like... pop crossover stardom. Here's
right.
how I went about it. I'm not gonna act like it's deeper than it is.
Well,
I kinda,
how old was he when he was doing this though?
Early 20s?
Yeah.
I mean, at a certain point, also, there's that kind of thing of like, I mean, and you and I have talked about this, but like when people get famous really early, they're treated like they're supposed to be mature artists. When
right.
It's like if you're
yeah.
in your early 20s, it's like, yeah, I mean, like that's how you kind of learn how to do anything
right.
is you just like mimic other people until you get a toolbox.
I also want to say that I really like the idea that he studied. Every song on the radio, and you said it was like 2001.
Right.
So like, he's not just listening to like post grunge like on the radio.
He's
also
listening
to
like Britney Spears.
He's listening like NSYNC and like
right.
Britney Spears, and he's like adapting trends
my
from
guy.
Like.
So also like
Kindred Spirit.
There are like a fair number of bands that like openly admit to doing that. Like, I would not want to do an episode on this, but you can make the argument that Good Charlotte deserves an episode.
Right.
For this podcast.
Okay. That implies we're willing to defend them.
Well, I like them. I think I'm Gonna Hope this is a dope album, like, whatever.
We can do
but,
a Good Charlotte
episode. They, like, the Madden Brothers openly admit to being like, yeah, like, we're not trying to be punks. Like, we're trying to, like, just be, like, rock stars and sell out arenas. Like, we're here to, like, get really, really famous, not to make, like, authentic music. Like, they've admitted to, like, getting tattoos on their arms because it like brands them as like punk artists.
Right. See, now that that's like, getting a little like, too deep, I mean? And now it's circling back to like now you sound like you have like a bit of a mental illness. Like, you're, no, in terms of like, it's one thing for like Chad to be like, here's how I build my like perfect monster mainstream album, and it's another to be like, my goal in life is fame. Here's how I modified my body, and all my artistic ambitions are surrounded by that.
We
like,
all just want to be big rock stars.
Hey,
I feel like the reason that like people will like are so like readily attack that whole like admitting like yeah I was trying to just like do the thing that was like hot at the time was because of like that just like you're basically admitting to like not like making authentic music at that point. You're just like, yeah, I'm just like copying whatever is like popular now. I'm not actually doing what speaks to me.
Right.
Yeah. And like.
But
what's really wrong with that?
The thing that I kept coming across when I was like studying why, like researching why people were hitting on Nickelback was like this idea of so many artists, pop or otherwise, like have music that is like melodically generic and have like empty lyrics, and yet Nickelback seems to be the band that everyone is like, no, this is the worst.
Yeah.
But like they don't do anything that all pop artists rightfully do.
But it's funny you should say that, like, the hate kind of comes from the beginning in terms of at first they get hated on because they're not heavy enough, and then when they actually cross over onto, like, rock radio, now they're, like, too heavy or, like, they're too poppy or something. Like, I don't know, like...
Are they too heavy or too poppy, or are they just, like, too obscure? Because, like, I don't know songs that aren't Nickelback singles.
I guess what I mean is, like, they were hated in the underground for the label choice, not fitting that label, but then when they become mainstream... Now mainstream hates them, so they seem to be hated either way.
Well, that may also just speak to the fact of like, in terms of who got sort of like poisoned against them first. That if you have like an overwhelmingly like vocal group of people who hate you, then when you enter into the mainstream, they'll like poison the well or whatever. I mean, am I crazy that there was something that like South Park or something had like a Nickelback joke or whatever? Because I feel like because I feel like so much of the hate around Nickelback was the like sort of like a pre-social media meme where
it was like a feedback loop,
where it was just like, oh well, like the joke exists such that like they have to be the butt end of it because that's what I've heard other people make joke, and so it's like I actually think in some ways it became like really fashionable to hate them because like they were so bland that you could make that joke easily and no one would push back at you against it because they'd be like, well, I don't even know their music that well. I don't really know what Nickelback is. Haha, it's a funny joke.
Right.
Yeah. Well, but also they were like at the top of the charts, so like there might have been a ton of other bland artists out there.
Like there are tons of shit bands like that.
But they're at the top. Yeah. So they're the one that is gonna get singled out.
Yeah.
I think it was like so many things working against them timeline wise where like they were coming up in a way that was making rock artists hate them. Or rock fans hate them, and then they released How You Remind Me, which became this huge hit.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of people who were listening to mainstream radio at the time who were like, why does this guy sound like that? And like, I don't like this. So I think you made a good point, which is that like they were just in this weird place where like the pop community hated them and the rock community hated them, and then all of a sudden they had the biggest song in the world.
Yeah, it's funny you just say people like working against them though, because as history will show us, everything went perfectly well for them. But, like, just in terms of, like, people's opinions.
Right.
On them, yeah.
And, yeah.
But just, like, you know, to circle back quickly to How You Remind Me, that, to me, is the first song that I could... First of all, the first song I remember hearing from them. And second of all, if you were to ask me, Matt, what Nickelback songs would you admit are actually good? I think that's such a good song.
Yeah, can we talk about that? How You Remind Me is a slap.
I think it's a really good song.
Like, can we play it?
Yeah.
What subreddit do you think people, like, discuss Nickelback on? Like, that's not, like, our Nickelback.
r/postgrunge, if there even is one.
Yeah, okay.
You're on it?
Well, I'm Googling stuff, and now I'm on, what subreddit is this? r/post-hardcore.
Post-hardcore? Would you call them post-hardcore?
I don't know what the fuck I'd call
them. I don't even know what post-hardcore
honestly,
is.
Honestly, they're, like, contemporary rock.
I think a lot of people think that they're kind of genreless, but not in the cool way, but in the way that it's, like,
yeah.
What are you even going, like, you don't seem to be really trying for anything.
They would fool the algorithms of things.
See if there's an R butt rock.
Butt rock. Yes, butt rock is actually a very relevant term.
This was the article that I meant to find before.
Is that an actual phrase?
Yeah, and this is the Miles Klee article. What was butt rock?
Butt rock, on Urban Dictionary, butt rock groups include Nickelback, Seether, Theory of a Dead Man, Three Doors Down, Breaking Benjamin. I feel like now we're getting into like two like metal hardcore
terms. Did they mention Creed?
Stained, Puddle of Mud, 3 Days Grace, Five Finger Death Punch.
Did you say Stained?
These are some very different bands.
Yeah, they're going too hard.
Is it just rock bands that people don't like?
From the late 90s, early 2000s.
Should we change the name from the skip button to butt rock?
the butt rock button.
Well, you should have like subtitles.
The butt rock bottom.
Like the skip button, like Nickelback, the butt rock era.
Okay.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Okay. So, AJ, while you're reading that, I also wanted to read this review that Rolling Stone wrote on Silver Side Up.
Yes.
So Matt Deal from Rolling Stone wrote, "Nearly every song seems trapped in the amber of early 90s Seattle aesthetics, the sonic equivalent of too many unfortunate goatees."
Shit, bro.
And this was in 2001.
Damn, that's like a take you dear now.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, it's funny though, because like I really do think Nickelback, because they're the most popular, they became like the poster child of it, but like... Right. There are a lot of bands that sound like they really wanted to be Nirvana.
Right.
And they really wanted to be, like, Alice in Chains.
Right.
You know what I mean? And, like, it's the sound of people that, like, are not them, but kind of can sound like them.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That's definitely going to get picked up on audio.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's
yeah.
Okay. You guys
that ASMR shit. I wanted to take a poll. Yes or no? Is Chad Kroeger a good singer?
Yes.
Yeah, he's good at what he does.
Yeah, I think he is a good singer.
I think he's a good singer, too. And I remember, like, early on, my first, like, understanding of the fact that people hated them was that they hated his voice.
Like, I think his voice is... You conflate the voice with everything else you don't like about it. But in a vacuum, I think he can scream.
Right.
He can hit, like, pretty good registers. Like,
that kind of voice, though, is very easy to shit on, though.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of corny.
But, yeah. But I think it also does take talent to sing like that.
Yeah.
But, like, I just remember, like, people found it really, like... Like, the tone of his voice, like, the raspy, like, growly quality, like... Mm-hmm. Really, like, unattractive and unsettling. And he was singing pop music, and I think that just made
him... I mean, that style of singing, like, wasn't around for that long at the
That's
time.
True. And it certainly wasn't as successful
like,
as how you remind
Kurt Cobain kind of, like, just made that into, like, a thing to sing, like, and, like, by, like, I don't know, that has been around for a decade. Like, it was still, like, a very new
for
thing.
For sure. I think he's a great singer.
So, this little section of this article might be relevant to that, and this is from... What Was But Rock by Miles Cleave for Mel Magazine. And he writes, writer and podcaster Mark Lee situates butt rock behind what he calls quote-unquote head rock, or the groundbreaking, thought-provoking rock of the moment. Quote, by contrast, butt rock follows, he argues. It is more derivative than innovative. It is mostly an excretion of what the head had previously consumed and processed. Butt rock engages base instincts. The Christian butt rock band Skillet, for instance, just had their single Legendary adopted.
I have to stop you at Christian butt rock band Skillet. Is that the phrase that you just said on my goddamn podcast?
Yeah, there's a hyperlink too.
What the South Park episode is on.
About Skillet?
With butt rock?
Carbon is a Christian rock.
And I think he, like,
Creed.
Nickelback's in that episode. Or is it Creed in that episode?
I know Creed is in that episode. Nickelback
South Park
too.
Was on.
Yeah.
The implication is that there were dominant elements in the radio schlock of this period that together formed butt rock's secret genome. That unmistakable essence of butthood. For closer analysis, I'd point us towards Hinder's Lips of an Angel.
Such a good song.
A song that, dating to 2005, resembles both a final synthesis of those trends and a tearful coda to them. The music video, with its embarrassing acting and sickly aesthetic, helps one immediately grasp the overstrained and undernourished quality of a canonical butt rock jam. Mm. I swear you can smell that room he's in, and the Axe body spray isn't helping. The vocal delivery has the rasp, phlegm, and curiously constipated warble that trace back through Creed and all the way to Eddie Vedder.
Oh,
that's unfair.
Here's my question. Is there an argument that Nickelback and bands like Nickelback helped introduce a generation to bands like Nirvana or
No.
No.
There's just not an argument for that.
I thought you were going to ask, is there an argument to be made that, like, the corporate sheen of music like Nickelback helped create a cultural moment in which the Iraq War was acceptable?
Is that a quote from the article?
No, that's me.
Well, Jake, I
guess what you thought I was going to ask you.
I don't know if I would say it's, like, a larger, like, thing, but it wouldn't surprise me if, like, someone was listening to a Nickelback album and their, like, older cousin in, like, 1998 was like, fuck that, put on Soundgarden.
Right. Yeah. I think it's kind of comparable to, like, rap stars nowadays. Like, I think it was Lil Xan. Who was like, yeah, Tupac wasn't that great. It's like the now generation who's, like, copying what came before.
Right.
Is being like, yeah, like, the people back then kind of sucked. Like, and, like, they're just making, like, a shitty diluted version of, like, what came before them.
I guess. But I think at the very least, bands like Nickelback opened people up to that, like, sound palette, if not, like, the actual... You don't think so?
No, I see what you're saying. But I just think that the thing AJ just read kind of nailed that. Again, to bring it back to how you remind me, I did like the song. I do like the song. If there's anything I could say about that, it's definitely not progressing anything in any way.
Right. And well, I think ultimately that's what rock fans hate about Nickelback, is that they're not doing anything.
So about the thing that you just read, one... Like, it criticized them for being derivative and, like, a dilution of what came before them. Like, Chad Kroeger, like, openly admitted to doing exactly that.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like, you're shitting on the person for, like, doing what they intended to do. Like, you cannot like it, but that's, like, kind of what they were doing. And two, it kind of went for a lot of low-hanging fruit, where it's like, they just shit on his voice for sounding constipated.
Well, that was
like,
a different guy.
Oh, you read two different things.
No, but he wasn't talking about Chad Kroeger in that.
But he might as well have been.
Yeah.
He might as well.
Yeah, so it's like... Like, I feel like you just had a problem with the aesthetics at that point. Well, and it was like, you cannot like the music.
It did feel
like,
a little personal.
Like, you're just going for low-hanging fruit and attacking, like, the thing that everyone attacks. It's like, okay, you don't like the voice.
Right.
Well, I don't even know if it's just a matter of, like, preference or whatever. I mean, I think what the article is maybe suggesting is that the voice is a choice.
Mm.
And that it's, like, kind of, like, an aesthetic determination to be, like, I'm gonna sing this way, and that, like, what it signifies is, like, yeah, right. I mean, like, sure, like, he intended to, like, be a copycat, and I'm actually okay with that if he's, like, taken as a pop act, but I think you can make, like, a broader cultural argument that, in general, even if that's your intention, it's an intention that you should never, like, have.
Right. And, dude, if you take, like, a survey of the bands mentioned in that article, and just other bands that we think of when we hear butt rock... Not necessarily like nu metal or anything like that, but a lot of those bands like Puddle of Mud, Creed, it does make the voice seem like it's an aesthetic choice because they all are doing it in their own way. Like, they're all like, you remember Everything's So Blurry? You remember that?
Yeah. I mean, it's that, but that kind of trend of like the same voice being used in like every artist of like that era, like mumble rap. Like,
yeah, I was just
like,
gonna say that.
Yeah, like the like that happens a lot.
I was also thinking about because. I mentioned Britney Spears already in this podcast, but like Britney Spears, I feel like everyone started singing like Britney Spears when she came out. Like everyone started just having intense vocal fry at the beginning and end of their lines after Britney Spears came. Like this, yeah. To Jake's point, it's just like it happens in every genre.
But it's almost it's almost universally criticized though, because people like think about how much hate mumble rap.
Right.
Well,
fucking Justin Bieber's new song. He's just doing that like whisper R&B thing that's really popular right now, and everyone hates that song.
I don't
like that song.
What?
I like that song. We don't have to talk about
whatever.
That, but I do love that song.
But I think why it created this moment where everybody's hating on like how Nickelback is doing it and those other bands, it's because the lineage of where they're getting the voice is so obvious and also so universally amazing.
Right.
Everybody knows, like, maybe not literally when they come out in, like, the mid-90s, but by the time of 2001, everybody loves Nirvana. Everybody loves Soundgarden. Everybody loves, like, you know, Alice in Chains. Yeah, exactly. Like, and so it's so obvious where they're getting, like, oh, everybody fucks with that. Let's do that. But it's just, the level of artistry is just not comparable, you know?
Yeah, and I think the main difference between what we're talking about with butt rock and mumble rap is that mumble rap, like... Mumble rap was new. Like, mumble rap was something very different, and that's what people didn't like about it.
Mm.
What people don't like about this is that, like, we did this already, and we did it better than this.
Yeah, like, this was incredible 5 years ago.
Right.
A bunch of people responsible for it are dead at that point. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's kind of a funny paradox that he's calling out, he's making it more of like an audience thing. He's like, mainstream audiences like this butt rock shit, so we're like, you know, we got to do it that way.
Right.
But then it was the most mainstream thing to also hate on Nickelback.
Yeah.
But it's like, so it's just kind of a funny little contradiction to me that it's like, is butt rock a thing that audiences found palatable? Obviously based on their sales, but also everybody you knew also hated Nickelback.
Where are the fans? Like, yeah, like where are they? Like, are they all in Canada? Obviously not, because their most recent album was number 5 in the US, but it's like, where do they, like, I don't know where they are.
Maybe they're not dedicated fans. Maybe they just listen to the music, like on their headphones and they've just listened to it.
Like, if you went on Spotify now, maybe all their streams come from, like, the 5 songs we all know from the radio.
They have 8 million monthly listeners still, and their most recent, or their highest song is, like, 350 million streams.
That's actually fantastic compared to a lot of artists.
Exactly. But do you get there with casual fans? I don't think so.
Like, not really.
I mean, a lot of casual fans.
I'm holding fast to my argument that you need dedicated listeners to get those numbers.
So I actually do want to get there, but first I want to... So that was in 2001 that they released that album. In 2005, they released All the Right Reasons. And this is the album that, like, I feel like everybody...
Wait, so did they not have an album for 4 years?
I think they were just touring a lot.
That makes sense.
They were touring with... They, like, opened for Creed.
Wait, what year was this?
2005. Wait,
which... Yo, my fucking brother, I think, saw them on that tour. Like,
fire.
Straight up.
Can we
like,
call him?
Yeah, why isn't he here?
Dude.
We invited the wrong person.
He fucking, for like, what?
Where is your brother?
LA.
Oh, no.
For like summer camp, like, he was like the oldest group of kids that year. Mm-hmm. And so they like, I forget where they were. They like traveled to Nashville for a week, I think. And they saw Nickelback on their tour. And it was like the height of the like shit on Nickelback era. And Danny comes back and I see him and he's like, dude, we were surprised with Nickelback tickets. And then he was like, Nickelback is good. Like, he like, unironically, straight up, for like a couple months was like, he got like their CD when we got back home. Like fucking, like he like liked Nickelback and defended them. Like,
We should have had him.
He was a convert for a little bit after seeing them in concert.
Right. I think there's like a fire ass, there's actually 2 fire ass points to take away from that. First of all, clearly that was their biggest album because it has all the singles, as you're about to say.
Yeah.
It's funny that that would be the height of Nickelback hate, is that their most popular, of course.
Sure.
But more importantly, it makes you wonder, given their roots, maybe a live Nickelback concert maybe was super heavy in contrast to like, they're like, this is our radio shit.
Right.
Maybe they're one of the band, like, you know what I mean? Like, I remember you were telling me about like, you know, this isn't the best comparison. Remember you telling me about how you saw Vampire Weekend? And, like, live, they were, like, kind of like a fish sort of, like, jam band type thing.
Yeah.
Which is not totally what you hear on their albums. Maybe if you saw Nickelback live, they would kind of, like, shred.
I also feel like a lot of live music in general is just kind of better.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I'll go to a show for someone, I'll just be like, I, like, kind of fuck with this. And then I go home and I put on my Spotify and it's like, I just find it, like, the most boring shit.
Also,
possible.
Your brother was also, like, 13 or some shit, right?
12 or 13, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Also, how much better would listening to Nickelback be if you knew that you were in a space where everyone there had paid to hear Nickelback? You know what I mean?
Yeah, it would be, yeah.
Like, if you knew that you were in a space where you're like, okay, it's fine.
You're in a
Everybody
you're
here
in a
wants
space
to listen to Nickelback. Like, that must make it so much more fun to listen to Nickelback.
You can shed the guilty pleasure elements and be like, I'm in a room with, like, 1,000 other people that love Nickelback.
Like,
let me just
choice.
Get into this.
Also, to the point that we were making before about, like, you only know the pop songs, like, you don't know the deep cuts of Nickelback.
Yeah.
If you go to their concert where they play for 1.5 to 2 hours, like, 30 songs, like, you're gonna hear those songs, and, like, maybe they kind of slap in a live setting.
Right.
And, like, you're like, oh, shit, this is dope, like, in a live setting, but then you go back and listen to them on the record, and you're like, these are boring, and, like, I don't want to spend time listening to this.
Right.
Like, yeah.
So I wanted to... I actually... really, like, I've been thinking about this quote for the past, like, 2 days. It was off of Grantland, and this was by Chuck Klosterman?
Oh, yeah.
He's a legit critic.
Yeah. I made myself sound like an idiot just now. and he like, wrote a review of the doubleheader with Creed and Nickelback.
I want to go to that show.
That would be... Guys, if I...
Wait, you wrote a review of this?
Yeah.
Do you have the whole thing right there?
Yeah.
Can you just send it to me?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
But this quote, I actually think, like, is wild. So he says, it's hard to get inside the existential paradox of Kruger's life on tour. Every day, he gives interviews to journalists and radio DJs who directly ask him why no one likes his band. And then every night he plays music to thousands of enraptured superfans, many of whom love him with a ferocity that's probably unhealthy. Every concert ends with a standing ovation. If he feels motivated, he spends the remainder of the night partying with forgettable strangers who will remember him for the rest of their lives. Eventually, Kruger falls asleep, and then he wakes up in a beautiful hotel room only to read new articles about how everyone in North America hates his band. There is not one part of his life that's real.
Damn. I mean, yeah. Dude, I mean, the paradox is so real. Like, it's this, like, everyone and no one is a fan of Nickelback.
Right.
Where are the fans?
Like, they were there.
They're there, man.
They're at the show.
Where are they now?
Thousands of enraptured superfans, many of whom love him with a ferocity that's probably...
I mean, this gets like more like a lot of aggressive white men in their, like, early 40s at this point.
Right.
Just, like, you know those, like, guys who are just, like... You see them on the subway, and you're just like,
this,
who the fuck is talking to this person?
This reminds me so much of the 2016 election, where
that's
it was
like,
oh my god, no chance. And then they just like, all come out of the...
And Nick, you remember when you told me the night of the election?
Like
the I remember Nick was telling me you got on the train, and you saw the hats, right?
Yeah, they came out.
And like, where were they before? And then the next day, you didn't really see them, did you?
Yeah,
like,
right.
But then like... You know, one night, it's like,
I
was surrounded by the fans.
Yeah.
I would be so honored if this podcast encouraged more Nickelback fans to, like, come out of the woodworks and, like...
Yeah, dude, hit us up.
Yeah, well, let's get a... Was it a Curious Cat?
I also read... This is a total tangent, but I also read a lot about how one of the reasons that people hated Nickelback is because Chad was so ugly. He was just such a... He had, like... I don't know if he actually had curly hair. I think he might have curled it himself. It was, like, very curly, pubic hair and, like, a really gross goatee. And I just read so much about how people were just like, he also just looks really dirty and crazy.
I'm going to throw out that he's currently smashing Avril Lavigne. So.
No, they're divorced.
Oh, never mind. I'm not going to throw that. I'm going to
we'll delete that.
But he did smash Avril Lavigne, so he's obviously got something.
He looks good now, but when he first came, it was kind of a costume.
I mean, I think if we're going to talk about that, we do have to talk about, like, the fact, you know, the rumors that Avril Lavigne, like, died, like, and now they're just, like, a replacement Avril Lavigne imposter.
Is that an actual rumor?
No, there are people who believe that Avril Lavigne died and now it's just a body double.
Yeah, it's a body double.
Because people are so cool and smart.
So, Avril Lavigne, like, she made some dope songs.
Yeah.
Oh, so we can get into it.
Okay, cool. Okay.
We're not going to do an episode on that because I refuse to believe that there are people who don't think that she's made dope songs.
Okay,
what is Chad's involvement in the body double saga?
Don't want to get into this. I'm not feeding into this.
This is the only conversation I came to have.
But dude, Chad being ugly is funny because I think part of why I might...
Chad being ugly is funny.
No, that's not what I meant. But part of why I might feel an impulse in my, like, sort of inner contrarian to kind of defend elements of Nickelback is part of that. I feel like why he's hated on so hard is kind of because they're like, you're just like this country loser white guy and you never should have amounted to anything. So why are you so successful?
Right.
Record labels.
Like, but you know what I mean? Like, I kind of feel like part of it is like, I kind of fuck with Nickelback on some level because I'm like, yeah, you really don't seem like you have star power. So I find the fact that you managed to find some somewhat interesting.
Right.
It's kind of remarkable that someone like him is famous because he's so obviously not celebrity, you know?
Right. It's kind of like what you said. You said this to me about G-Eazy when G-Eazy was first getting famous, where you were like, I don't like it when G-Eazy raps about like him stealing my girl because he is like... He is realistically enough in, like, on my level and in my world enough that, like, him taking my girl, like, does seem like a distinct possibility, and that makes me super uncomfortable.
Yeah, because I said that because at the time it was like, okay, you know, somebody like T.I., I'm never going to be in the same situation as T.I. for, like, steal my girlfriend, or, like, Lil Wayne or something.
Right.
G-Eazy could have, like, performed at Amherst College, come to one of the social dorms afterwards, and bang your girlfriend. Because, like, he's kind of in that world. So I was like, I didn't want to listen to G-Eazy's music because, like, whatever... Because, like, when he would flex on me, I'd be like, yeah. It was kind of like the same shit with, like, what's his name? Hoodie Allen.
Yeah.
And part of you're right. He's not that good looking. His voice isn't, like, immediately available that he's talented. You gotta kind of, like, think about it a bit.
Right.
And the music isn't very progressive.
And he's out there making so much money.
On top of that, they're so paid. Their music was everywhere.
Yeah.
I heard Photograph and Rockstar on the radio every fucking day.
Yeah.
In, like, 2005, 2006.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so that's a recipe for the hate, you know?
Right. I also think that, so going back to social media, I was reading, so, okay, there were a couple, like, proto-memes that happened about Nickelback that sort of, like, fed, back when, like, people didn't understand, like, how the internet worked and didn't realize how much power it had. Well, first of all, I was reading something about how on Comedy Central, they were running a promo for this show that was, like, kind of a panel show about, like, what's happening in the news.
Does this involve Brian Posehn?
Yes!
I actually didn't research this for this, but I remember reading that. I remember looking up why everyone hated Nickelback, like, years ago.
Right.
And kind of like how the, like, Bill Cosby Me Too moment is, like, traced back to, like, Hannibal.
Right.
And Hannibal started this massive dialogue. Brian Posehn is, like, the ground zero of, yeah, like, people hating Nickelback.
Right. So the quote, this isn't an exact quote, but this was in the promo for the show where Brian Posehn, who, if you don't know who that is, like, look him up, you'll probably recognize him from some sitcom.
He's
that
very
seen.
Funny.
He said they were talking about violence in music lyrics and debating whether or not music can incite violence through its lyrics. And the joke that Brian Posehn made was, I don't think violent music incites violence. I think bad music incites violence. I listen to Nickelback and I want to kill the members of Nickelback.
Damn.
And so that quote, every show that you watch on Comedy Central, there would be an ad for that other show with,
damn,
that quote on it.
So it disseminates to anybody, yeah, watching Comedy Central for, like,
right,
those few weeks.
And so people just, like, got used to this idea of Nickelback being the stand-in for whatever music you happen to not like.
Word.
It's just, yeah, it just, and then there was stuff like, I think I might have liked this Facebook page back when, like, people liked Facebook pages.
That was a long time ago.
It was like, let's see if we can get this picture of a pickle to get more likes than the Nickelback page.
Damn, I remember shit like that.
And, like, it did. Because people just didn't realize, like, how powerful the internet was. And, like, people just, like, wanted to fuck with Nickelback on the internet.
But it's funny because for every like that a page that's negative about Nickelback gets, like, pickle versus Nickelback.
Right.
That is still increasing... Pickleback. That is still increasing Nickelback's clout. Part of why I think maybe they were so huge is because they were hated on so
hard.
And you couldn't escape conversations about
it.
Everyone talked about it all the time. Everybody's like, even like, you know, we were in elementary school.
Right.
We don't know anything about music. We just know what's on the radio. And we talked about Nickelback. I remember hating on Nickelback, like, on the playground and shit.
There's something interesting, the idea of them almost being kind of like the first meme in a way, that just people just enjoyed participating in this thing online with other people.
Yeah.
It's just like, it didn't even matter, like, what the content of it was.
And
it was literally just being able to, like, pile on with other people.
And, you know,
like, we're all in on this joke.
There were obviously groups that got that level of hate before, but there wasn't really the internet for it.
And I think that even Nickelback didn't... I think Nickelback went through, like, an arc of, at first they were like, damn, this sucks, why does everyone hate on us? And then they realized what you just said, Matt, which is, like, it's just the internet, and, like, this is all good press for us, and now I feel like they're kind of, like, really okay with being the band that everyone says they hate. Because, again, they're going out on tour and selling out shows to, like, adoring fans.
You know, the internet these days is, like, just another layer of reality that we're all living in. You know what I mean? But it's, like, for someone like Chris Martin or Chad Kroeger or whatever, you know, it's just a matter of, like, what world do they want to live in? Do they want to live in the world that's in front of them, which is they get on stage in front of thousands of people and fucking tear the house down and make a fucking $1 million... and they rock stars and shit? Or do they want to, like, sit on back then MySpace and Facebook, or now, like, Twitter and Reddit, and listen to people that are not in the real world to them complain about them? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like Jake was saying, like, we don't see Nickelback fans. Nickelback only sees Nickelback fans.
Right.
And it's the white noise of, like, digital media that's, like, everyone hates us. But as far as they know, like, where's the hate? It's, like, just, like, it's just, like, nerds on the internet or something.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. I can't imagine what that does to your ego to, like, every day hear about how people hate you and then, like, perform to, like...
I mean, if they took $2,000 worth of mushrooms, though, they don't have egos anymore.
Oh, my God, turn the mic off. It's over. Dude, I mean, I don't know. I imagine it's actually a very kind of bizarre recipe for a kind of, like, individualism that I'm sure is kind of potent in terms of, like... He knows people hates him, but also he can kind of believe, like, but I make music for a very specific audience that's, like, really loves what I do.
Right.
And maybe it's kind of just like, well, kind of maybe fuck the world, because
I
know who likes my music, and I see them when I go on tour.
Right.
So I don't need to worry about, like, everybody else.
Right. Yet. I was reading about this album that so many people called Rockstar the worst song of the decade, and we can all agree that those people are wrong, right?
The worst rock song of the 2000s.
Isn't that song a joke? It's like satire.
I've been waiting to fucking get to this. Because people were so blinded by, like, the Nickelback hate meme that they're like, willfully being obtuse. That song is obviously satire.
Right.
They're making fun of the hedonistic rock star shit. But people are like, wow, Nickelback is so fucking brain dead. Look at them, like, singing about having drug dealers. Right. Like, dude,
That song's fucking funny.
Dude, what if Tom York, over, like, some fucking, like, weird blippy synthesizers in, you know, I'm sure it would sound way better. What if he sang those exact lyrics about, like,
right.
Had a drug dealer on his feet. Like, that's my shitty Tom York impression. But, like, you're right. It's just, it is so obviously satire. And yet, the meme will prevent you from acknowledging that. And they're being like, well, this is the worst song of all time. No, it's a fucking cheesy, but it's fucking, it's ironic.
It's
they're kidding.
Funny and it's catchy.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of already made this point when you read that quote about that criticism where I was like, well, yeah, but that's like what they're trying to do. They're trying to be derivative and like just cash in on trends. So it's like when you criticize them for doing that, like how much does that really hurt when it's like they're probably sitting there being like, yeah, that's like what we're, yeah, exactly. Like, thank you. That's the point.
Dude, you actually got to move on a little bit.
And then also with Rockstar, when people are like, that's a shitty song, they're like, well, yeah, it's a joke. Like it's kind of hard to criticize something that one criticizes itself or two, like, you criticize, like, exactly what it's, like...
Yeah.
Like, you're just saying, like, what it's doing, and you're taking that as, like, a criticism, but they're being like, no, like, we're selling out arenas. Like, I don't care.
But the extension of that is obviously that you can just then criticize the intention, which, like, maybe wasn't being done enough in that article or by other people in general.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's sufficient for them to just be like, oh, we just wanted to be derivative.
Right.
And it's just like, well, we can argue that's a bad thing.
It did make that point, yeah.
It's kind of nuts, though, because now I think we're so many layers deep. If you go back to his original quote about studying everything on the radio, it's kind of funny because it's like, well, yes, I do feel the song in and of itself is satire, but how different is it from their original mission statement of maybe they did just want to be big rock stars?
Right.
So now we're like actually in this sort of weird abyss where there's a lot of like double meaning happening, and it's like, the song is satirical, but it also is kind of straightforward. It's also kind of autobiographical because clearly they did want to fucking party and be rock
stars.
This
is making me really mad now that we're like digging into this because it's like they set out to do something and they completely succeeded. Like, they were at bat and they fucking knocked it out of the park. Like, straight up. And then they come out with Rockstar?
Yeah.
It's like, well, this is all a joke to us. Look at how much we don't care about it.
Yeah, they just flex. They just flex on
it. Are you shitting me? Okay, let me ask you a question.
What?
If I texted you guys and was like, yo, Nickelback's coming to New York for $20.
Oh, definitely.
I'd go.
20, yeah.
No.
For 20
Jake,
bucks?
You suck.
Jake, I paid $15 to see your band.
Cloud District is better than Nickelback. I'm sorry.
What if we end up doing an episode on Cloud District?
Go for it.
You gotta get your weight up first.
You would go. I don't even believe you.
You're not hated on enough. You have too much.
Okay,
what
night of the week is it?
Fuck off. What night? What would be?
Is it a Saturday night?
It's a Thursday.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay, now it's a Saturday.
No.
What?
I'm not giving up a Saturday night to see Nickelback.
I am.
What do you think?
I'd absolutely do it if I don't have to travel that far.
Yeah, if they're like at the Barclays Center?
Yeah. MSG, Barclays, I'd go. But like,
what if it was like $50?
MSG Barclay, I think I would.
No.
This should be a game that we play for every band. Is like, what's the cap on seeing them? How
dude,
much would you
I
pay?
Wanted to say no, but the more I thought about it, I think I would go to a Nickelback concert for $50.
Well, I would do it if it was at like a really weird venue that you wouldn't expect. Like when we went to go see Danny Brown at Warsaw. Like if we had seen Nickelback at Warsaw,
I would do that for fifty bucks. Yeah.
But at this point, if Nickelback actually played outside of, like, the Midwest, or I guess Canada or whatever, if Nickelback actually came to, like, New York City or Brooklyn, how would we separate who's there kind of as a joke and who's there because they're actually Nickelback fan?
I think 90% would be as a joke. Like, that's my...
No, but here's my point. I think that the people who are doing it as a joke, deep down, are not doing it as a joke. I think they just lost the plot. I think they're like, oh, this is all ironic. And then you're just like, just Nickelback's here.
Like, deep down,
like
the Creed
like,
fans.
I was literally going to make that point.
But here's the problem, is that I was ready to go into this podcast just swinging about all the Nickelback songs that I actually like.
Uh-huh.
And then I thought about it as we talked about it this whole time, and I think I like maybe two of them.
Okay.
I like how you remind me. And then the other song I was going to mention, we found out before we started recording, isn't even a Nickelback song. It's just Chad Kruger and what you say, the guy from Saliva, which is a hero from the Spider-Man
song. Oh, right.
I actually really love that song. It's actually not even really a Nickelback song.
That's fair.
Although,
I guess I think it is.
I mean, because he is Nickelback.
Yeah.
What would you do if you went to a Nickelback concert and Chad Kroeger was like, welcome to our B-Sides tour? And you're like, God damn it.
I've been like, I mean, I would...
Yeah, they're like totally like 80s hair metal banding it. Like, we're not playing the hit.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, Cherry Pie is not being played tonight.
Not for
Play Photograph! Hey, fuck you!
We have done a real underground show.
Should we wrap up?
I guess
any final thoughts?
I guess maybe we could go around a circle and just offer your final thoughts on Nickelback. I guess you want
to
go first.
Sure. I mean, like, yeah. I mean, my MO isn't to like get people to realize that Nickelback is a great band. It's more just to like think about why they hate Nickelback and if it's at all based on anything that's like fair and have anything to do with like their merit as musicians. And if it is, cool. If you're like, you're allowed to hate the music. But I do wonder like how much of the things that we love and hate in music have anything to do with the actual quality of the music itself.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think with Nickelback, I think a lot of it has nothing to do with the music, even though some of their music is trash.
I feel like a strong need to get the opposite like side of the story. Like I want to talk to Nickelback fans.
Yeah, if you guys have Chad Kroeger's number, at me, we'll do a special reunion episode.
Or if you have Avril Lavigne's number, tell her to call me. Like, I heard she's divorced.
Or her bio.
She's single.
I respect artists that are upfront about their like intentions to just become famous.
Yeah.
And just be like, we're just like trying to like sell out arenas and like dope if you make that happen.
Right.
But that being said, I think that their music is like objectively like I straight up don't like their music.
Okay.
Like, I think that the argument of like it's just a shitty distilled like more digestible version of like Pearl Jam is totally holds water.
Yeah.
And like why would I listen to that? And coupled with the fact that like they like did it and got famous and then just like totally poked fun at themselves with Rockstar so that no one else could really make fun of them. That pisses me off so much.
It's like Eminem's last verse in the 8 Mile.
Oh, where he's like,
just like saying all the things that everyone hates about them. Like, now you say something about me.
But they're doing it like jokingly. Like Eminem is doing that as like a fuck you to
right.
his haters. Like Nickelback was just like look at how much we don't care about this lifestyle and how
right.
much we're gonna make fun of it when it's like you're clearly participating in this and it's what you wanted from the beginning.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
that pisses me off so much. in short, yeah, I'm standing hard in the fuck Nickelback right. camp.
I respect
yeah.
that.
That was the conclusion of that.
What?
Was fuck Nickelback?
I don't... after digging into it for an hour and a half right now, like, I'm
That's
very...
Fine.
Like, holding my ground on the Nickelback sucks.
But see, doesn't it feel so much better to have that opinion now that you've, like, hashed
100%. 100%.
That's the name of the game, baby.
Yeah.
Okay.